What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Avengers, Age of Ultron. Is garbage, folks.
Is it an alligator or a crocodile? I don't know the difference, and at this point, I'm too afraid to ask.
Look at that. That is a werewolf, folks.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Denny Geek Presents Marvel Standum Live. And I just want to point out one more time how much better that our producer Andrew's opening credits look than that AI garbage that Marvel shoveled out for Secret Invasion. But anyway, that is neither here nor there. My name is Mike Cicchini. I'm the editor-in-chief of DennyGeek.com for now. And with me, for all time and always, I have Denny Geek News and Features Editor Kirsten Howard. Welcome back, Mr. Joe George, brilliant pop culture writer who is kind enough to lend his talents to Denny Geek. And we have podcaster Matthew Bowes joining us for the first time. Were you here when I wasn't here one time, perhaps? Matthew, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you before we get rolling today?
Thank you very much. So I do a podcast called Marvelous with two L's because we're very British, very like Marvel Standum. So if you want another hour of in-depth discussion of every MCU film and TV episode, come check out Marvelous. Part of the Eloquent Gushing podcast network, we also do Bake Off and Shadow and Bone and all sorts of podcasts on things you might like.
Thanks for joining us. Even though, Kirsty, you invited a competitor on the show. What is this?
All bets are off this season, Mike. All bets are off.
Scroll, perhaps? I suspect this is going to be kind of a rocky episode of Marvel Standum because I have a sinking feeling I'm the only person who likes Secret Invasion. But before we get into that.
Sorry, that was already off. I don't know where it came from.
But first, Kirsty should tell us what went on in the pretty eventful episode 4.
I will. In the 4th episode of Marvel's Secret Invasion, Nick and his wife have a heart-to-heart, and Nick tracks Skrull Rhodey to an ambush on the president by Gravik and his men, where Talos is killed by Gravik. Boo. Gaia is alive, having used the Super Skrull machine to give herself extremis. However, in her last conversation with Talos, she claims she no longer believes in her father's optimistic ideology, saying that Gravik's more violent approach to the human race just works. And that's about it.
Let's get started on the episode. But first, Matthew, I'd like to know your thoughts overall on Secret Invasion so far, as well as what you think of episode 4.
That's a little, you're right, rocky, rough area to start with. It's been slow is perhaps the most generous way I can say it. I find myself in a position where I'm wondering if I'm bringing too much to the table, too much expectation for this to be anything, a thriller at all, some sort of spy thing at all. Episode 4 has given me a little bit of hope, I will say that. There are aspects in here that I was hoping for early on. We've got conversations between people in, dark deeds being discussed in a church. We've got lovers on different sides of an issue. We've got double agents, triple agents, revelations about characters, things we may or may not know that were coming. But at the same time, it's a bit formulaic in what it's doing, and no one's quite expressing the emotions we want them to have in those situations. No one is paranoid or strung out as they might be in this situation, finding out everyone is against them. I've got a bit of hope that it might build up to more of this thriller spy aspect that we wanted from it. But I feel like what they're also setting up is a beam of light into the sky and two superpower people trying to have some inspirational ability against each other. So good. Maybe it's delivered something. Maybe it might deliver more? Question mark?
Joe, I don't think because I've been absent so much the last few weeks, I haven't gotten to talk to you about Secret Invasion at all. And, you and me, we're not always on the same page, but we usually, because we're so old school with this stuff, And I think we share a loathing of the source material in this case. I've been dying to hear your thoughts on Secret Invasion as a whole, as well as episode 4.
I think I'm going to be a disappointment to you, Mike. I think the show
is really disappoint me, Joseph.
Oh, thank you. I think the show is really bad. I think it looks great. I think it's the best looking Marvel thing in quite some time. I think it's extremely well acted, and I think it's absolutely nothing. It's not a thriller. It's not a spy story. It's not a sci-fi story. It's not a social commentary. I don't know what this show is. And you can take individual scenes from the show and I'll say, oh, that's good. I love Ben Mendelsohn, like seeing a hot, schlubby, middle-aged white guy because, you know, he's aspirational for me. I love hearing,
watching. You see me every week.
I meant another one. I'm sorry. I love watching Samuel Jackson and Don Cheadle share scenes together. But when you get to the end of every scene, you end up asking, well, what was the point of that? And point on a plot level, point on a character level, point on a social commentary level, any of those things would be fine. Like, I feel like I don't want to say that, like, I'm holding this show to a higher standard. Like, it, you know, we talked a little bit about this last time that it's not Marvel's Andor, and that's fine. It doesn't need to be Andor, but it needs to be something, even if it's just super spies versus aliens. And it's not even that. And so this is a well-constructed, beautiful nothing to me. And I'm really disappointed in it.
That's worse than being angry at it.
Exactly.
Kirsty, I know you've gone back and forth on this. And I think, like, we've mostly aligned on, like, what, you know, like, the first episode was bad and we liked episodes 2 and 3 well enough. But this morning I was like, I love this episode. You're like, what's the love? So... yeah, I want to know where you're at here.
You ever hear the expression, you can't polish a turd? That sums up how I feel about this show so far. Like, I'm willing to, it might surprise me in the last 2 episodes. It might end up being wrapping up really well or having some twists that might make me want to rewatch it and think about what I've seen in a different light. But so far, there's a lot of polish on it, but it is still a turd. Like, it's, the writing's not good. The twists you can see coming a mile away. It's really formulaic. But then you have these amazing actors saying the lines. Like Joe said, it looks incredible compared to some of the other MCU shows and the movies that we've had recently. But it's just not very good. And none of this stuff seems to matter. There's, like, you know, when Maria Hill died, Nick Fury had a conversation with her mom, and it was like, but he didn't seem to, there was no effect on him. Like, it was just forgotten about. And then, I don't know, will that be the same for Talos? Like, will it just move on next week? And Nick just goes, he's just being sort of shoved from scene to scene to do something and then, or say something, and then that's it. There's no cohesion, really, or certainly a lack of cohesion that I would expect. Like, a bunch of great scenes and good ideas, but they just don't gel together. That's how I feel about it so far. And episode 4 felt like a step down to me from the 3rd one.
Look, I can't argue with any of these critiques because, like, this show's politics are incoherent at best, problematic at worst if you're taking a really uncharitable view of them. Messaging, story-wise, et cetera, yeah, it's kind of soupy, right? Like, you just kind of like, what are we going to stir up this time? But for some reason, well, not for some reason, I think I know why, but for some reason, I am enjoying this more than any non-Guardians of the Galaxy Marvel product in a while. Look, the first 3 episodes of Ms. Marvel, was Ms. Marvel the last Disney Plus show before this? Like, has it been that long?
No, there was She-Hulk.
Oh, yeah, I blocked She-Hulk out of my memory. But, like,
Mark, so, like,
So this is the first good MCU show in a while. Look, I'm not a hater, but like there are so many criticisms that even people who love Marvel and love the MCU have been leveling at the studio for a long time now. The sameness of the visual effects, the blandness of the visual effects, the lack of, you know, allowing directors to direct and actors act, you know, James Gunn projects notwithstanding. You know, the unwillingness to step away from the formula of, you know, every other scene has to be nodding to or setting up five other things down the road. And then, of course, there is just the inescapable Bendis Whedonitis of just like MCU dialogue in general, where everybody is just like nervously quipping all the time and it's obnoxious. And on funny, this doesn't do any of those things. Like, so it may not be doing anything, any one thing in particular, other than having, you know, Sam Jackson and Don Cheadle just be absolute gods every time they're on screen at all, let alone together. I just have these blinders on at the moment because it genuinely looks and feels so different from everything else that the MCU has been doing post Endgame that I just kind of want to go with it. And like, I don't want to look, being an apologist for Marvel is lame. Like, this is the biggest juggernaut in pop culture history. They don't need me to cheerlead them, but like, I want this to be better and I want it to do better because I want them to take more chances like this. That being said, none of you are wrong.
There's been a situation with this that I haven't had before where I've had comments from people on stuff I've said or written. The one after the second episode was that someone was really, a few people were really annoyed with me for saying that Nick Fury knew his wife, it was a Skrull. They thought that, you know, just because it ended with the reveal of Nick coming home to his wife, maybe he doesn't know she's a Skrull. And they were really quite cross with me. And I said, well, it feels quite obvious that he does know that his own wife is a Skrull. Like, that it does feel obvious to me. And then the next week, yes, he does. He does know. Of course he does.
Of course he knows.
And then, right. And then last week I said, well, Rhodey's a Skrull at the end of the third episode. And Alec was like, no. You know, I question your concept of reality or whatever he said. He said, you know, there's no way they're going to do something as obvious as Rhodey as a Skrull. You know, there's something else going on here. You know, there's another level. And it's just like clear that there isn't another level yet in this show. Like, it is the obvious thing. It is the obvious twist. There's no secret third thing. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's the problem, is that secret invasion. There should be a secret third thing. And that's why I say this with the proviso that, like, in the last two episodes, maybe there is. And it will, you know, we'll question everything we've seen so far. But it just all feels very obvious and very signposted and quite heavy-handed. And that's not something you would want for what is quite obviously, you know, a show for the adult fans or adults, not necessarily for kids, you know, starring Old Man Fury. You would expect it to be a bit smarter, perhaps, and a bit more complex. The complex things they are trying to tackle, as Joe said, like the political stuff, they're just not really doing anything to it. There's no depth to it. I don't know what I'm trying to say here. I'm just saying that, like, basically, is there a secret third thing, or is this just kind of a big nothing burger?
It is, and I share exactly what you're saying, Mike, and I think that's why I'm so angry at it, because we know that you can tell all sorts of stories within the Marvel Universe. The success of the MCU should be giving the company license to tell some of these other types of stories, and we got little tastes of that with the holiday specials from last year, where we got a proper old school horror story and we got a good Christmas story. And, you know, they've done little bits of that. And a spy thriller just seems right. You know, just it seems like it's such an easy, I don't know any sports metaphors here, layup, I guess, soft pitch. I don't know. It seems like something they should do so well, and they're botching it on every level. And I almost feel like I can't blame them for going back to what they do. You know, Matthew, you were saying it might end with a light in the sky and people having idealistic battles with each other. And when you're saying that, I'm like, that would be something at this point. I would be happy just get the bare minimum at this point, because it's half-heartedly trying to do something different. And that's such a frustrating waste. It's a waste of these actors. It's a waste of the Skrulls. It's a waste of the freaking Super Skrull at this point. It's so frustrating. So angry, disappointed with this.
And like, even that Emilia Clarke is still alive. In my review last week, I'm like, maybe she, you know, used the extremist machine to make herself a Super Skrull when we weren't looking. And the show just does it like straight up and, you know, cold open, just like we're just getting a brief flashback to show, you know, yeah, that's what did happen. She's absolutely fine. I was just like, well, that's so lazy. Like, if I can write these things in my mind, they're bad because I'm not that good. I'm like a newborn baby. We go, you know, got your nose. I'm absolutely shocked by every twist. And yet this is like, it just feels really lazy and kind of easy. Like you said, it should be easy for them to get a dub here, but they've not gone for it. And I don't understand why.
And it's all the promise of what this could have been. This was, for me, one of the things I was excited by was that the Marvel shows haven't had their own personality so far as a franchise, as a shared universe. In the same way you go to Star Trek, you go to the Arrowverse, you sort of got a clue about what sort of show you're going to watch and get. They've all been so different that you've not had that from the TV series. And this was the first time I felt like it was going to be like Falcon the Winter Soldier, and a bit gritty and a bit down to earth in some ways. And whilst we've gotten that, it also feels like a story I've seen done better in many shows previously, including Falcon and the Winter Soldier did some of this, and The X-Files and Star Trek's done it. And there's nothing here that I've not seen before. And exactly as you say, Kirsten, like, that I can't see coming. So help me just enjoy it in some way.
I'm glad you brought up Falcon and the Winter Soldier, because that is the project that tonally this feels the most like in a lot of ways. I was atypical as well in that, you know, the sloppiness of the final episode, really aside, like, I enjoyed Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Like, I thought it was weird. It had pacing issues. It was far from a perfect show. Granted, I have like severe late 80s Captain America comics goggles on that show was catering to in like real Mike bait ways. I don't think it deserves the hate that it gets, but again, kind of political messaging, incoherent at best, et cetera, et cetera. Remind me where everybody else stood on that show before we go any further. Like, Matthew, were you a fan of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, or did that annoy you as well?
I found that quite a slog to get through. There was very little joy in it. And I think I understand from the real world aspects what impacted it and what it could have been. But what we got was difficult to get through. I enjoyed the end of it. I think we did a phase four wrap up as well. And one of my favorite bits was the speech that Sam gets to give at the end. I think I've not seen that delivered on elsewhere in Marvel. And this was, again, the place that we could have seen that. But I feel like it finally did start giving us something towards the end. And again, that's the thing that's giving me hope for what we might get in Secret Invasion, maybe.
Kirsty, I feel like you were on the fence. If Alec was here, he would be like, I know, I hate that show. You know how much. Alec is like almost at my levels of Moon Knight hatred with his hatred of Falcon and Winter Soldier, I think.
I didn't think it was very good. But there were things that I enjoyed about it. There were things that it picked up and then dropped, like a toy that it was interested in for a few minutes and then I just want to play with something else. Like the Isaiah Bradley story. I haven't read those comics, and I was really fascinated when the show brought that story of, you know, his past sort of Cap adventures into it and how the government had treated him and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, maybe they'll do something really interesting with this. That's like, what an interesting element of the show. And then they just drop it and move on to something else. There's Bucky's trauma or whatever. I thought, oh, that's interesting. They're finally going to deal with the fact that, you know, he's been through all this stuff and he's really damaged and he needs help. And then I guess he talked to a therapist for like 8 seconds and then he was fine. It just didn't really, yeah, again, this was another one of those things where they had ideas, but they just didn't seem to know what to do with them in that 6-episode format.
I'm with you, Mike. It's a top 3 Marvel show for me, and probably for the same reasons, because I love Mark Gruenwald's Cap run, and it draws so heavily from that. I love US Agent. Wyatt Russell is perfect casting for that character. I can't believe we got to see Battlestar and the Power Broker, even if you didn't like that reveal on television. All of that, you know, worked for me. But I also, I think that's such a good counterpoint to what Secret Invasion is doing, because as you guys have pointed out, the politics are messy on Falcon and Winter Soldier, that it brings up. I think its big ideas are far more coherent than anything in Secret Invasion. You know, I say this as a white dude who has never experienced anything like that, but the scene where the cops see Bucky and Sam arguing in the street and they start hassling Sam, you know, Captain America, that struck me as more incisive and striking than any of the conversations that we've seen in Secret Invasion. So I do think it's better on that. But even with that stuff aside, its pacing is so much better. Its fight scenes are so much better. And just the scenes of Sam and Bucky squabbling with each other is so much more enjoyable. You know, the kind of the secret sauce with Marvel is always that it's not the best action. It's not the best cinematography. It's not all of these other things that you go for. At the end of the day, we enjoy these Marvel things because we like watching these characters hang out. You know, it's kind of all the shawarma scene at the end of Avengers that makes the rest of that stuff work. And I can't put my finger on why Secret Invasion can't pull that off, because we've been with Nick Fury from the beginning and few actors have more charisma than Samuel L. Jackson. And he's getting to exercise muscles here that he doesn't always get to exercise. And as we've pointed out, Don Cheadle, Olivia Colman, Ben Mendelsohn, all these people are fun to watch, but everything still feels so inert. There's something that, for as many flaws as Falcon and Winter Soldier had, it's something that it got right that is just not happening here with Secret Invasion. And I think it really has to land on the shoulders of the showrunner, Kyle Bradstreet. I think he's failing this more than anybody else in the show.
I think I might know what it is. It's just always two people. We have seen a few bits where there's more than two. The scenes are just like two people talking for the most part. It's sort of like over two shot or whatever. That's what we've got here. It's like there's a soapy element to it that's not really gelling. It's not an ensemble in the way that those were, and so they don't quite work as much. And I don't know whether that's like fallout from COVID, where you're just trying to minimize the amount of people you've got in a scene, or they think that's more intimate. But we're not really.
I think it's the latter. Yeah, I think that's what it is.
We're not gathering the team. And even in Ms. Marvel, we had her and her school friends and people like that. And she was meeting other people, and it felt more, I don't know, more slightly more ambitious than this. There's something too minimalist about Secret Invasion, given the broadness of the topics it's trying to tackle.
I'm wondering, is it just the availability of the actors, because they've got this cast going on? Sam Jackson was available for all of it, but actually Emilia Clarke's over here in Halifax, and Ben Mendelsohn's down in London. Olivia Colman's over on the coast or something. He's just going around filming his scenes with each person each time.
I honestly don't know what's gone on behind the scenes here, but I'd be fascinated to find out.
I don't think it's anything other than budgetary restrictions, because I picked up on this too. It's like, it's another scene with two people talking, right? You know what did that a lot? All of the Netflix Marvel shows, especially in the episodes where it was really apparent that they were stretching to get to 13, but also even just in like regular episodes, like even, and it wasn't necessarily a bad thing all the time, but I would be watching Daredevil season 3, which was great. There were times when I was very aware. It's like, oh, two people talking. Oh, another scene of two people talking. Some of it's a budget thing. I think some of it is very much a creative choice of let's keep this intimate, which I have to appreciate. You know, they're not trying to wow us with razzle dazzle all the time. And they want the performances to speak for themselves. And I think the performances are giving more weight to the words than they would have on the page for certain. But now I'm starting to wonder if part of, like, one of the ways this is pushing my buttons is that I'm like, well, Daredevil was like this and I love Daredevil. So, like, maybe this is just like, and it's almost there too. You could see it kind of reaching for a little bit of the edginess that the Netflix shows had. Like, Sam almost drops like big swears every now and then, and there's blood actually being shed. So I was like, right.
Is that going to be the big reveal at the end of the next episode? Is they're going to pan over and there's a hallway and we're going to be like, oh, it's going to be like the Netflix shows. It's on now.
Yeah. Hallway fight with Super Skrulls.
I mean, I would take it at this point. It's better than the bazookas we got at the end of this episode. I hear what you're saying, and I would cut it some slack for going for intimacy if they didn't name drop Raven Carver in this episode. You know, that was like, when you're watching a terrible movie and the characters in the terrible movie are watching a really good movie and you're like, why am I not just watching that movie? You know, when, as soon as they started talking about Raymond Carver, a guy who writes amazing stories where a couple of schlubs sit down and have a conversation while getting drunk, and that conversation, you know, covers the secrets of humanity and the nature of God and all of these things without ever being pretentious and just using regular language, you know, talk about a guy who can turn a conversation into something thrilling and rich. And all of this is just the emptiest nothing conversations, you know, that if you know your Chandler, then you should know how at least the beats, or Carver rather, not Chandler, but some Chandler would be good too. If you know your Carver, you should, you know the, kind of the beats of how a good, rich conversation goes. And this is just like, you're in creative writing 101 and you just are stringing words next to each other. It's, I can't let them pass when they do that pretentious stuff like that.
Did any of you watch Mr. Robot, the show that Carl Bradstreet worked on previously?
Only a couple episodes and turned it off because it looked amazing but was dumb and empty.
Matthew, did you watch it at all?
Exactly the same. Only a few episodes and went, oh, this looks really clever and intense, I must come back to it at some point. And then never did.
There was a lot of two people talking in that show too. And again, you know, you've got Rami Malek, you've got Christian Slater, you've got all these great like character actors, and it was worth watching every week just to see these people play off each other. It certainly didn't feel as formulaic and as this.
I could potentially take us way off, like further off track than I already have, but I'm not going to. We haven't talked about spoiler time. We have not talked about, you know, Talos' death, you know, which I thought was pretty understated as far as MCU deaths go. Like, I don't know how meaningful it was. And of course, whether it sticks or not will determine just how meaningful it is. And as you folks already pointed out, whether or not it has any actual noticeable impact on Nick will determine how meaningful it is and all that. But it was another thing that struck me, that it's like, okay, like, here's a character that we have come to really like in these few episodes. Because I did not give a shit about Talos in Captain Marvel. Like, I did not care. I did not care. It was not a character I ever wanted to see again. Like he made no impression on me at the time. And I'm not a Captain Marvel hater. Like, I think Captain Marvel is a perfectly entertaining film. You know, like, it's fine. This show has made me kind of feel for him, and his deepening his relationship with Nick has kind of made me feel for him. And I thought it was interesting how they tried to give him that kind of like sad prestige TV croaking here.
It was a shame we didn't get a sort of ending moment, whether in that scene or before, in this episode, between him and Fury. We've had really good stuff with him in previous episodes, and we didn't get some just extra button on it to make it fit, make it really land what this means, or what he's giving up, or his hopes for the future, or something. Again, you know, we've had other shows do this really well with really good chemistry between their leads. Falcon and the Winter Soldier did it well. I talked about how there's stuff in the X-Files like this, and that's built on that sort of chemistry. And it was here in early episodes, and suddenly we didn't get anything between them, and except for a bit of an action sequence, which that the action sequence may or may not have landed for everyone. I think they were going for something, again, more grounded, and then suddenly we've got Groot arms coming out. So it did a whole very different thing. I don't know that in trying to pretend to be Russians, they should be using Groot arms, was probably my only point on there.
I like how casually you just drop the Groot arms. Like, it just sounds...
Well, exactly. He just suddenly does it, and then no one else does it, and it's sort of, we move on from it. And I don't know whether they were trying to kill the president or capture the president, but the fact that it was Gravik in there and he delivers the blow means I think this is absolutely the end for Talos. I don't think we're going to see him again. And that's a real shame. The only, again, hope that I've got for the future is maybe we're going to get one of the flashbacks we've been getting each episode to the past of Fury that shows his relationship with Talos. But I wish we'd had that in the build-up rather than post it, if that's what we're going to get.
I was less sad that Talos was dead. And I do think he's a good character. I think he was one of the best things about Captain Marvel, in fact. I was less sad that Talos was dead and more like, why would you get rid of Ben Mendelsohn from the MCU? Like, he's amazing. Okay, like Kobe Smulders, maybe she'd had enough of not being explored as a character and just being dotted in here and there and getting absolutely no justice or, you know, no fleshing out whatsoever. But like, I don't know why you would ditch Ben Mendelsohn. You're running out of like good actors in the MCU. I know in the multiverse anything is possible, like he could return, but 3 out of 4 of these episodes have ended with a shocking death, and they've reversed one, but these other two are just like, see, it's serious, like this is why you should care, this is why you should tune in next week. And I'm like, what, for another death? What more to it is there? I'd love to know. But
Nick's wife is getting her ticket punched next week.
I love Talos. I think he's such a great character. I mean, I don't love Captain Marvel. It's a flawed movie, but one of the things I think it does really well is totally play with us comic book nerds who went into it like, yeah, Skrulls are bad guys. That's what we're expecting here. And then for them to twist that on its head was great. And then to then furthermore use that as a coherent refugee analogy was just brilliant. And I think it was Mendelsohn that really made that work. He's a unique MCU character. You know, he's not just a retread of characters that we know from the comics. He's inspired by the comics, but exists only in this universe. I think he's really special. And it's not only that I love Ben Mendelsohn, I love the whole concept, you know, and just for them to kill him off so unceremoniously, it's a bummer.
I'm so sorry while you were talking, Joe, my Captain Carter fell down.
Oh, that's a bad omen.
Captain Carter from the great movie Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, your favorite?
I think this is the what-if Captain Carter.
Doesn't look like it to me.
Yeah, it's a bad omen. I'm not sure what yet. But
she's going to show up in the next episode and get killed and nobody's going to care.
That happened in Doctor Strange too. Do you remember when they had Captain Carter and then she just died?
Yeah, it was amazing.
I do hope Deadpool 3 like does some kind of parody of that. I really hope that like most of the announced guest stars in Deadpool 3 are going to get offed in undignified and quick ways.
What is this nonsense of people trying to say, yes, Jennifer Garner is Elektra again? That's revisionist history that I cannot stomach.
We have talked about Deadpool 3 at the beginning. We usually do the what's going on.
Oh, and that's, yeah, it's true. We didn't do a news roundup. I mean, what is there to talk about other than these absurd castings and Hugh Jackman looking resplendent in a comics accurate Wolverine costume, which is pretty awesome. I could only like that more if it was like the brown and orange, like Secret Wars era Wolverine costume, but that's just me.
Joe just scoffed. I've never heard
I throw
that.
Out a hot take. I don't like seeing him in the costume, in any comics accurate costume. I didn't see it. I didn't expect this coming, but as a 5'4" man, I like Wolverine to be short. And Hugh Jackman, yes, is tall, hairless, and handsome. And that's fine. I've accepted that. I mean, I like him, but his Wolverine is a different character than comics accurate Wolverine. And there was something about seeing him in a, you know, in that costume that was like, you're not Wolverine, are you? You're something different. You're too tall, too handsome, too hairless, too Australian. You don't even know about hockey. So I'm not as excited about that.
Do you have a dream casting for Wolverine?
No, I really don't. I just want them to be short and then grouchy and ugly and hairy.
Pretty furry. Okay.
Don't have to be comics accurate Wolverine short, but I am not tall. I should not be taller than MCU Wolverine.
Tell everyone how tall you
are. I'm 5'8". Like, I'm not tall. Like,
I would get a crick in my neck looking up at you in the face. This one's as tall enough.
You'd be the only one.
Come on. Like,
Lee is suggesting Tom Hardy as Wolverine. I will never forgive Tom Hardy for Venom, number one. Number two, yes, Tom Hardy is 5'9", so I do appreciate, recognize another short king. But what somebody had suggested once, what's his name from The Hunger Games?
Josh Hutcherson?
Yes.
Yeah, Taron Egerton, I could see that, at least throwing out there. Also 5'9". What crazy world in this when 5'9 is short? I'm not going to allow you to get away with that. I just want him to be gross. I want him to be scuzzy. And I want you want to actually feel that human versus beast thing that is the whole appeal of Wolverine stories.
The MCU won't even let its villains be bad. Are you kidding me? Like, they're going to make Wolverine scuzzy? Anyway, I forget where we were going. Oh, just back to your point about Elektra, though. There is revisionist history on the internet where people are like, bring back the 2005 Fantastic Four cast for one more ride.
Wow.
That, like, terminal nostalgia brain that people have.
I mean, I saw all those movies in the theater back then. I was there too. I remember they sucked then and they suck now. Yeah. I don't understand where that is, because those nostalgic people were not there in the theater at the time. Maybe they were, I know I'm old, so maybe they were like 4 years old and they watched it on DVD and now they love it. But walking out of the empty theater when I saw, you know, Rise of the Silver Surfer or whatever, or man, the utter embarrassment that I felt when the lights went up at Daredevil and me and another comic loving friend grabbed a bunch of people who didn't know the superheroes but just loved Spider-Man, and we were like, this is gonna be great, it's gonna be like Spider-Man, and then just the utter sadness that we felt in 2003 when those lights came up and we were like, we're so sorry, you know, those people did not exist then. Where are they coming from now? Don't try to give me this nostalgia stuff that I didn't get it. I was there.
It's the people who stood up and applauded at the end of The Flash.
Yes, exactly.
As my friend's 11-year-old kid referred to it the other day, it's the trash. So, yeah.
I assume all these people will be back for like 1 second, and it's just for a joke.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You've got like Channing Tatum as Gambit. You've got Elektra. You've got Ben Affleck's Daredevil. You've got all of these. You've got Halle Berry's Storm coming back, you know. But I don't think they're fully involved in this story in the way that Hugh Jackman's Wolverine is. It's sure to be just for a throwaway joke.
Lee just said that there's set photos from Deadpool 3 that shows them fighting on the ruins of the 20th Century Fox logo. Yes. I was on vacation last week. I have not been online. So now, all right, now I'm excited for this stupid movie. Can I give you guys some ammunition that you can use against me for the rest of my days? When Daredevil 2003 came out, I saw it on opening day, Valentine's Day, alone, first showing of the day, like could not wait. And I loved it. I was like, this was awesome. Like, I was wrong. Like, I've come out, like, you know, but at the time I was like, this is better than Spider-Man. And like, they really like went for it here. I don't know what I was thinking. I was lonely. Like, I had nobody like to set me straight, but.
No. Okay. Well, you said the same thing about Thor: The Dark World. You said you went to see it and you thought it was amazing, but then you just said, oh, but I was high as a kite. So that explains
I was super baked when I saw Thor: The Dark World. Yes. Okay, like, so.
Okay. Well, Daredevil? Same or sober?
I was probably super baked then too. I was 21. Like, so I was never sober.
It was like 9 a.m.
There's a director's cut that redeems it? Question mark?
Really?
That Daredevil film, there was a director's cut that throws in a whole legal story and other stuff, which adds more time onto it and adds more explanation for things. I don't think it improves it, I'm afraid, but it does add coherence at least.
Yeah, I don't know who walked out of I walked out of Daredevil saying, this is terrible, but I wish there was more of it.
I need to get us slightly back on track with Secret Invasion, what we call it a day. When it was announced, when the first trailers hit, I was like, man, I would love for us to come out of this show feeling like Nick Fury is going to finally build a shield as we know it in the comics, because the MCU shield never got a chance to be the shield of Jim Steranko and, you know, just the amazing organization that touches all these corners of the Marvel universe that it is in the comics, right? It's like, it was introduced, it was a thing, and then it's like, nope, it's been run by Nazis this entire time, and now it's over, and now Nick is in space. And it's like, okay, like, but S.H.I.E.L.D. is too cool of a concept to just leave fallow. Instead, what Secret Invasion is doing is further undermining Nick Fury, never mind his character, because he's supposed to be a terrible person, but with the Skrulls, you know, when Talos was telling him, he's like, yeah, like when you did this, like that was us. Like, so even Nick's S.H.I.E.L.D. successes and, you know, domestic and foreign successes, hell, his romantic and bedroom successes apparently are also all because of Skrulls. I don't know how I feel about that.
It's a really strange situation that they've never delivered on Fury properly, which has been great. I'm saying never delivered on Fury. I've enjoyed him just being a mysterious figure in the background. So I've been a little mixed on what we've been getting here so far. But you're right. The promise of this could be we've sorted out all the issues. Because I think they even did a whole build-up for this, of this is going to change the MCU and set up things for what's going to come in the future. And we're not seeing that particularly. And God, we were talking about all the deaths earlier. I'm not sure Fury is making out of this in the end. So whether we're going to see anything built from it, whether we're going to see anything actually delivered that does change the world outside, because I'm not sure people are watching this. And I'm not sure people are liking this. So do they want to sort of have this as the baggage that defines the Kang era and what comes next for Marvel?
Boy, that's a good, that just makes me think of just another failing of the show is that you've got Contessa running around in the other things, you know, presumably we know that Thunderbolts is going to be where this is going next. So you could see how the sort of dissolution of what's left of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Fury's network could lead to her rising up. But we're doing the work for the show to do that. So even on like the Marvel shared universe level, Secret Invasion isn't hitting that. It's just kneecapping Fury in a way that's not interesting. And I don't think, Mike, I was with you. I was hoping to see some belt buckles and Dum Dum Dugan and all of that fun stuff. And this show's not going to go in that direction.
I don't think it's going to address S.H.I.E.L.D. in any way. I think they're done with it. Not seeing any kind of hint that S.H.I.E.L.D. is rising from the ashes or anything like that. It's hard to know how this series will end and whether it will deliver on its, like, there are big, you know, ramifications for the MCU. They always say this will change the MCU forever. And it's just like, will it though? Will it?
It is a little refreshing in that despite its like heavy ties to Captain Marvel, I mean, like this show has to be incoherent to people who have not seen Captain Marvel, right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel like it's actively setting up 15 other things. It just kind of feels like it exists in the same corner of the MCU that Falcon and Winter Soldier did and that I presume Thunderbolts will. But I seem to remember them saying that like Secret Wars was going to be very important to Secret Invasion was going to be very important to Armor Wars. Remind me, was that first a Disney Plus show and then became a movie, or was it first a movie that then became a Disney Plus show?
Disney Plus the movie.
Okay, so that was going to be, I am wondering now, for those who don't know, in the comics, Armor Wars is about, you know, Tony Stark realizing that any like armored supervillain in the Marvel Universe like is using his tech to some degree, that like somehow elements of it have made it out onto the black market. And so he feels responsible for all of the bad things that these people have done using his technology, you know, like however subtly it was integrated into their stuff. With Rhodey being a Skrull, you know, who knows what Skrull Rhodey has had access to for however long Skrull Rhodey has been around. You know, you have to imagine that some of this stuff has now been disseminated out into the world and falling into the wrong hands. So I think it will be kind of an interesting motivation for Rhodey in Armor Wars, trying to clean up that mess. But now that I know that this is a movie and not a Disney Plus TV series, considering how the MCU films don't actually acknowledge the TV shows, I'm not so sure.
I don't think we're going to get an Armor Wars movie. That's my prediction.
You don't even think it's going to happen, huh?
No, I don't. I mean, it could do, but I don't see how the series leads into that. Or Ironheart, actually. It feels like they've been kicking the Armor Wars can down the road so much that it will just quietly be shelved at this point. I don't know what the hunger for it is out there. I don't know whether Cheadle is still up for it or not. I haven't seen any recent interviews with him sort of hyping it up or talking about, you know, pre-production getting going or great scripts come in or anything like that. Like they usually like to talk about it. I haven't heard anything like that. So maybe we'll get a little special presentation of Armor Wars. Who can say?
But you mentioned like the idea of Rhodey being, you know, a major part of this. One of my disappointments with Secret Invasion is that we're not talking, oh, Martin Freeman's been gunned down and turns out he's a Skrull. You need to go and investigate that and find out how long he's been a Skrull and what that impact that's had on the other things. Oh, we found out the same about Rhodey. Whether we see it in this show or not, I'm not getting the sense that this is having any impact. And I want to see them getting paranoid. And if we've got lots of conversations with two people in a room, finding a way to, you know, sharing intimate secrets with each other or confirming things or having a Skrull detecting button that tells them if the person is or not, just some way of doing that paranoia. And then when we know, finding out how long it's been, or is that person still around? Because I don't know. Is Martin Freeman just going to rock up and we kind of forget this has happened on this side of the screen?
Those are all good questions.
You're not wrong.
Very good questions. Yeah. ... question mark and no one has an answer. It's such a shame.
Lightning round before we wrap it. Each of you, predictions, next week's death and next week's Skrull reveal.
Kang is a Skrull, and that's how they're going to get rid of Jonathan Majors.
Who's left to reveal as a Skrull? Even Nick.
Yeah, Nick.
Nick dies at the end of episode 5, and he's a Skrull.
And episode 6 is just them rescuing him from... Because have they established whether they keep people alive?
Yeah, they have.
This is not the spirit of the lightning round, is it?
They do. The person that stepped off the spaceship at the start of episode 1 wasn't Nick. It was a Skrull posing as Nick. And the real Nick will surprise Gravik just when Gravik thinks he's dead. That's my prediction. And if I've absolutely written how the show ends, I will be so mad.
You've done it before.
The only other characters left are Olivia Colman and the president. I think those are the only other humans left in it now.
Is that it for today?
Please.
You can give your prediction.
I'm going to agree with Lee that Olivia Colman's character is probably a Skrull. And I don't think Nick is making it out of this show alive as much as I desperately, desperately want him to. Just cannot imagine a world where, I mean, I like him so much and I've been so desperate for them to explore Nick Fury for so long that I'm not even mad about the digital de-aging tech and in those flashback scenes, you know, like I need him to survive, but I think you're right. I think they're going to punch his ticket and give Sam a break. Matthew, one more time. Why don't you tell everybody everywhere that they can find you?
You can find us all over the internet. We are the Eloquent Gushing Podcasting Network, where we do talk about the MCU and the Great British Bake Off and everything in between those two properties. I do a show called Marvelous with my co-host Laura and Abby, who say really interesting things, and I tell them how it links to other properties in the world and steal their ideas, which is always very helpful.
All right. Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. This has been awesome. I hope you come back. That is it, folks, for another episode of Denny Geek Presents Marvel Stand'em Live. Don't forget, follow Denny Geek US on YouTube. I mean, if you're watching live right now, you already know this, but if you're listening after the fact, we are on twitch.tv/DennyGeekTV. Catch our upcoming episodes with some cool surprises. I will not be one of them next week because I will be running around on the ground at San Diego Comic-Con, but I'll be back for the finale of Secret Invasion in 2 weeks. Oh yeah, we're at Marvel Standum on Twitter and Instagram. Drop us a line there. Let us know if you have any questions, any theories. We'll see if we can address them, whether I'm here or not. If you came in late, you can watch this episode at our web home. We are denigeek.com. We have a web player there. We are all of our amazing Marvel coverage, stewarded by Kirsty, is at denigeek.com/Marvel. Don't forget, you can check out past episodes there, wherever you get your podcasts, on YouTube. You know the drill. Thanks again to our guest, Matthew Vose. Thank you to Joe George, who has continued to put up with me all this time. Thanks to Andrew Halley, best producer in the multiverse. Michael R. makes the podcast version all it can be. But most of all, thanks everybody for watching, listening, following, and subscribing. This has been Marvel Standum on the Denigeek Network. Until next time, remember, folks, we stand together.